Welcome back to Extension 720 here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, the new film, The Last Black Man in San Francisco, is in theaters this weekend. The movie tells the story of a young man in San Francisco who finds his family's old house empty and, well, moves in.
Maybe he's right. What if we shouldn't be here? We should be here more.
Some millionaire.
But The Last Black Man in San Francisco is not a hostile, gritty real estate saga about squatters' rights or property rights, although it could be. This is a well-told story about love, loss, and family. It's a story that deals with gentrification, identity, and most of all, friendship. It's a semi-autobiographical story written and directed by childhood friends Jimmy Fails and Joe Talbot. Jimmy stars as Jimmy in the film, and Joe directs it. It's getting great reviews, and I must say the film is the best I've seen so far this year. An angry love letter to the city they call home, Jimmy Fails, Joe Talbot in studio tonight. Thanks for being here, guys.
Oh, thank you, man.
I really enjoyed the film. And I guess I'll start with you, Jimmy. Just the idea of putting your story to film. Where does it come from?
Just comes from, you know, walks and talks me and Joe had back in the day as teenagers, talking about life and whatever comes up, you know, the city, life, girls, whatever. Kind of just was a very informal idea that just came up just from literally a talk we were having. And then it, you know, we did a little concept trailer, and the concept trailer was, you know, me riding through the city on the skateboard, kind of similar to in the film, and in the beginning of the film, and Joe was filming it, you know, Nat was right here. He was driving the car. His little brother. And we did that, and that was sort of a calling card that brought the people that made up our core team, sort of, and that helped us make it happen, you know?
Yeah, basically, it was a family affair for a long time, family and friends. We had made movies together in high school, but we'd never done anything quite like this, a feature on this larger scale. Right. So, as Jimmy said, we shot this concept trailer, and we cobbled together this group of what felt like the last artists in the Bay Area working together for years on this. As, you know, for many of us, it was our first venture into feature filmmaking. So here we are now. I can't really believe it.
And it's great because you feel that this film is not just telling Jimmy's story and telling a great story about the house on Golden Gate and everything about that, which we'll get to. But you feel that it's about San Francisco, and you can feel that this was a process, that this is an indie film at its best, because it takes place in San Francisco from people who live in San Francisco. I said angry love letter, but it is a love letter.
Yeah, I mean, we worked through a lot of our feelings about the city with each draft. I think the first draft was angrier, and with each consecutive draft, I think it became more loving and empathetic, which feels like the spirit of the city. It's not to be hateful in our fight back against what's happening, but to try to lead with love. And I think a lot of that comes from Jimmy as a person and as the character in this film.
Jimmy, as someone who, I mean, this is semi-autobiographical, so a lot of the scenes in the film actually happened to you.
Yeah.
As the actor, having to recreate scenes from your own life, what's that like? I mean, is that hard to do? Is it challenging?
I mean, it's hard and it's not. It's like, it's easy because it happened to you, so you can remember this sort of feeling. You know, you remember it very vividly, so it's not hard to recreate it in that sense, but it is hard to recreate it because you do have to go back to that feeling that you had when you were there, so that's what makes it hard. But
so you're mentally going to that place that you actually experienced.
Absolutely.
And there's some tough scenes in this film. There's some films that it's not just skateboarding around the city. There's some tough scenes about family. There's tough scenes about friends and people that you lose. So that's not an easy thing to mentally go back to some of those places.
Yeah, no, not at all. But end of the day, you know, you walk out a better man, and you get over some of those resentments you had with some of your family, and you get over, you know, you deal with a lot of those demons you had. So I think I came out of this a better person.
Joe, the film, you know, like we just said, it's a love letter to San Francisco, but it takes on a lot of issues that many people here in Chicago would recognize, and that could be gentrification, inequality, this concept of what once was yours is not yours anymore.
Right.
And really kind of grabbing your head around that. I can't tell you, my family's from Chicago, and I'll go back and see where my dad grew up.
Mm-hmm.
It ain't that anymore.
Right.
Someone else is living in that house, and that house ain't even a house anymore. It's a condo, or it's whatever. But you have these feelings of trying to attach yourself to where you're from, even though It's no longer like that.
Yeah, it's been interesting touring with the film and really starting to get a sense of just how large this issue is of gentrification, the changing faces of American cities throughout the country, and frankly, even internationally at this point. You know, we got letters early on from people as far as London and Paris saying these same things are happening here. But, you know, I think it feels like this destruction of regional identity and regional culture, you know, thinking back to a time when you had accents and buildings, certain very minute details of a conversation you might have with a neighbor that feel very specific to that region, certain food. Now everywhere we go on this tour, you know, there's avocado toast and acai bowls, right? Which I thought was a Bay Area sort of thing, but it's everywhere now, you know, and the same yoga pants. And I mean, it just feels like our cities are, yes, and I think that is an unfortunately universal feeling. And so it's odd, you know, in some ways it's really warming to go to these different cities and see how resonant our film, that's very much a love letter to San Francisco, down to the casting and the exact Muni bus that we use that feels like the one we grew up with versus the new one. And yet in an eerie sense, people are finding ways to connect with it,
yeah,
because I think, like you said, it is happening.
It definitely relates, and to living in Chicago. What I also find interesting too is you know, this is really a story about, it is about family. And Jimmy, tonight, the Extension 720, we're kind of going after, you know, Father's Day theme, talking about fatherhood. And this film, there's a great relationship, even though there's not much of a relationship between you and your dad in the film. And that plays out, and that's a big part of the film. What's your thoughts on fatherhood and how it plays out in this film?
I mean, I was raised by my dad, so we're very tight. So I don't necessarily think that the film is reflecting what our relationship is now at all. It's more of the resentments I had towards when I was younger and what he was trying to do, how he went about showing his love and for me being so naive and wanting that house back, you know. So we just had to show that part, and it was hard for, you know, my dad watched it, and it was hard for him to even see himself being that harsh, but that's how it was. But, you know, he's also, we have a different relationship now. So
there's a great part in the film, and I don't know if this is autobiographical or not, is it's just the way that your character changes his clothes when he comes around his dad. Doesn't want his dad.
That's pretty autobiographical. I mean, the thing is, I did do that for a while, but me and my dad are so tight that it got to a point where it was like, I can just, you know, the first couple of times I was like, oh, you know, change clothes, whatever, just so he doesn't say anything. But then it's like,
well, what were you afraid he was going to say?
Exactly what he said in the movie. Why are you dressed like a white boy? That's what he said. That's literally that's autobiographical. That's what he said when I first pulled up on the skateboard with, you know, my flannel and whatever I was wearing.
We're talking about the film, The Last Black Man in San Francisco, which is in theaters this weekend. In studio, the director, Joe Talbot, and the star, Jimmy Fails. All right, we'll take a quick break, come back, and we'll continue the conversation about this film here on Extension 720. Stay with us. Welcome back to Extension 720 here on 720 WGN. I am Justin Kaufman. The film, The Last Black Man in San Francisco, is in theaters now, one of the best of 2019. I'm not just saying that. That's getting great reviews everywhere you guys go. Congratulations, Joe Talbot and Jimmy Fails in studio. The story of this film, which is so great, is really surrounding a house. And for people who don't live in San Francisco, these are the, I don't know if they're right to call it the Painted Ladies, but but the idea that these Victorian architecture, this amazing house that is built by the grandfather of Jimmy in the film, and the idea that it no longer belongs to the family. It's been gentrified and it's someone else's house. But Jimmy won't let it go. Is that an autobiographical part of this film?
I think it was for a very long time. You know, I'm an older man now. I mean, that it comes more from this is a 5-year process. So the initial story was how I felt at that time. I used to go back to the house all the time. The house represents family for me. It represents ownership and my grandfather, who was my idol. I think, you know, that's the main sentiment. And I mean, in the character, it's like a very younger character in and of myself, you know, I mean, it's like, it's based on myself, but I think it is a younger character in being so naive in that way. But I feel like that was important, you know. And also, I mean, I think of it when I'm watching it, I feel like me and mine are like two little kids. It kind of seems like we're like two younger boys just kind of figuring it out. That's kind of what it seems like.
That's a great way to put it, though. There is a childhood aspect to it. But at the same time, this house, on Golden Gate, it's a main character. And when you think about directing a film like this that's going to have it all about the house, the living space, are you thinking about how you're going to show it, how it plays, in it, even in scenes where they're in front of it or around it, and it's necessarily about the house?
Yeah, you know, watched a lot of HGTV. No, you know, it is. It sounds like a cliche, but the house really does feel, I think it was important that it feel like a character to understand why Jimmy is fighting so hard for this place. I think, obviously, most importantly, it's what it means to him, even if it's weren't as grand of a property. But I think in this story, we would talk about sometimes how it's a love story between a man and a house. And it's also, you know, about this deposed prince who's banished to the outskirts of San Francisco, makes these pilgrimages back to the heart of the city to one day try and reclaim the family throne. So when you think about it in that way, we really wanted to find a house that captured the magic of Jimmy's imagination, a place that, you know, he remembers from his childhood, but he hasn't gone back in since. And so we spent over a year trying to find the right place in San Francisco. And that's one of the places where our team and this collaborative effort really showed. It was me taking walks. It was one of our co-producers, Luis Alfonso, Jonna Tichette, our production designer, Jimmy, Kalia, like our whole unit, this collective of people before the movie was financed, long before we had any sort of certainty that it would even be made, let alone shown in theaters, people hitting the ground in San Francisco, knocking on doors. And what we would find is whenever we'd see a beautiful facade, we'd go inside and we'd be bracing ourselves because so often the inside would be gutted. And all that great detailing that makes Victorian so special and so unique would be lost. And so we finally knocked on the door of a house that I used to pass on my way to school with my mom and my brother Nat. And this was a house that was like a dream house to us. And an old man beckoned us inside, also named Jim. And it turned out that it was amazing. It was like he became our fairy godfather because we went inside and the whole modern world faded away. And it was even more remarkable when we learned that he had actually done a lot of the work on the house himself. He'd spent the last 50 years of his life doing everything from building organs into the walls, which you see in the film, to actually carving the witch hat shingle by shingle. Yeah. Which is also featured in the film. So in some ways, he became an inspiration for the character, too, as someone that really had devoted himself to this property.
Took care of the house, yeah. And you could, and you get that feeling. That's what I mean by the authentic. You could tell that this is made by people who love the city because you get the feeling you picked the right house. It's not the Full House or whatever it might be. But you know what I mean? Right. Like that there was some care put into this. Jimmy, one of the other things about this story, and this happens in Chicago as well, we just had a study that came out that talked about how much money was essentially stolen from African American homeowners in the 80s and 90s in Chicago. 70s, 80s, and 90s. There's a study about just generational wealth and how certain real estate practices got African American families on the south side of Chicago to contract instead of buy. Mm-hmm. Regardless, that's a news story, right?
Yeah,
that's a terrible thing. But it resonates in this film because you recognize that there should be generational wealth. There should be the house should be Jimmy's. Mm-hmm. It should be because of practices, whatever, gentrification, however it was, because of the beauty
of the
architecture.
That's how it feels for everyone else, you know.
But that seems to be a part of this film as well. It's a comedy. It's eccentric. It's great. Well, I don't want to paint a picture of this film as, you know, dark.
No, of course.
Taking on the issues of our world. But this is a big issue about black families that get their property taken from them.
Hell yeah, man. And I don't even want to say it, you know, necessarily was taken. It does feel that way. But we did, you know, it was like a loss. You know, there was a lot of family issues and everything that led to that as well as it being taken. It was a little of both. You know, I don't want to just say that we're completely innocent of doing anything that would have, or my family is of, you know, of losing
didn't
the house.
Pay it.
Sure.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
You know, it's like, so, yeah, I mean, that's definitely an issue. It's like, I can count on my fingers how many of my friends that are black that are going to inherit their parents' house. I have like one friend I can think of off the top of my head named Mike, and he's from the Fillmore, and he still lives in his parents' house, and he's probably going to have that. Everyone always goes over there. It's like the neighborhood. It's kind of like how my house was when I was there, when I was younger. It's like the neighborhood house. Everyone goes there, hang out. Everyone's always in and out there, and that's like the only person off the top of my head that I know.
That's the thing in San Francisco. It's like so hard to overstate the importance of home. Not only is it a place that you gather, that you feel comfort and safety in, your family, your friends sometimes live there. That's what our home was. Mm-hmm. We lived in my parents' house for 5 years to make this film. Jimmy and I both, you know, if we did not have that home, there's no way we could have afforded to stay in San Francisco as broke artists. Even, you know, the joke in our family was when Brad Pitt came on to be our executive producer, I'd be taking out the trash and my neighbors would go, "How's your little film going?" And my mom would shout, "Well, Brad Pitt's making his film." And they'd look at us like, "Yeah, sure, you're crazy. Uh-huh, that's nice, very nice." But it was, that's the truth. You can live in your parents' basement and have a movie being executive produced by one of the biggest stars in Hollywood. And so home really means so much in San Francisco, I think, right now. And like you said, inheriting your homes. You know, there was a great article actually that came out by, I believe, a Chicago writer about seeing each of the characters in the film through home ownership.
Yeah.
You know, the guys who are on the corner who don't have homes, who live in the projects up the street. Jimmy's character longing for this home, building some of his life around the identity, you know, of wanting this home. The only character who has one is Montgomery. His best friend, who has, through that in part and through the relationship with his grandfather, he's grounded in a different way, you know?
That's a great way to look at it. I mean, really think about the different backgrounds of these characters. You said something, I think it was in Rolling Stone, I was reading about San Francisco, and I think Chicago's a little bit like this, but San Francisco obviously is unique, that people would go to San Francisco at one point to go to San Francisco, meaning they want to be a part of that culture.
Exactly.
They want to be a part of, and maybe it was eccentric, maybe it was weird, maybe it was a place that you would fit in. I want to fit in there. You think about the 60s and the 70s.
Yep.
And now it's not unlike the 19th century gold rush.
Well, I mean,
where
you want to fit in,
exactly.
You want to fit in, but for different reasons. You want to fit in to the new startup or something.
Or
like
for
that.
Money or things
or
like
for
that.
Or for money or for something like that. So,
what does that do for you guys as San Francisco born and bred?
Well, it pushes us out. It makes the artist community a lot. The artist community is dwindling a lot. You know, like you said earlier, it feels like we had the last group of artists all working on this film. You know, like the fact that it's like 70 people in a city that's like has a million people coming in and out every day. It's like, that's it. You know, the artists are the curators of the culture. So it's like you can't push us out, you know.
And yet they are. But you're absolutely right. I mean, you pulled the words out of our mouths. This is something we've been saying is people have come to San Francisco to be fully themselves in a way that they couldn't in the small towns or the cities that they came from. You know, you can't go any further west than San Francisco. So whether it's bohemians going back to the 1860s, Mark Twain, or African Americans coming from the south to work in the shipyards during World War II, or the Beats in the 50s, or Janis Joplin and Grace Slick in the 60s, gays, you know, this is a city that welcomed everyone with open arms. And it's ironic that that same city is pushing those people out, the real people that make San Francisco what it is, in droves. So for us as artists growing up there, we grew up on a lot of the music and films, Coppola and those great 60s bands are all people who arrived in San Francisco. So now I think we feel an onus because you're not attracting the next great poet or songwriter, because you'd have to be crazy if you are to come to San Francisco now with how expensive it is. The onus to make the art about San Francisco is on those of us that grew up there.
Childhood friends, 11 and 15, something like that, like where you guys first met each other. Mm-hmm. What is it like? You're here on a tour now, this film's coming out, to have made a film together, to make this project, to think back to those days to now. What is that process like?
You know, it's like crazy to make a movie that people actually see now. You know, we've been making them. And so it's just, I mean, it's all surreal, but it's all, you know, it's like it shows you do have to start from somewhere, you know.
One of the movies we made back in high school, my brother and I made it, my brother Nat, and it's a movie where I'm in it as well. Me and Jimmy go out to the suburbs for what becomes a very strange weekend with two girls that we meet in the city, and sort of about city kids being very out of place in the suburbs and running back to the city as quickly as we can. But we made that movie with a friend of ours named Sam Jackson, not the Samuel Jackson, but she's a local actress in the Bay. And she hadn't seen us since we made that movie.
Wow.
So she came to the premiere and she was just like, "What is going on?" I mean, it's just surreal. Like at the premiere, we looked at one point out in the audience and Danny Glover, who every San Franciscan grows up knowing Danny because he's from the city. And he's just like a wonderful, you know, living embodiment of San Francisco. I look over and we see Danny Glover talking to Barry Bonds.
at the premiere. We're just like, oh my God, what do you do with that?
Yeah, just.
What do you do with that, right?
Yeah, man.
It's wild.
The film is called The Last Black Man in San Francisco. It's in theaters this weekend. The director, Joe Talbot, and Jimmy Fails, who's a semi-autobiographical story, and the actor, the main character. You guys, great film. Thanks for being my guest tonight.
Hey, thank you for having us, man.
Thank you for having us.